70 record closing highs so far for the Dow.
Blasting through a ceiling.
In a record-setting IPO.
Investors who have been riding the wave.
When the stock market is booming, we're made to believe the economy is booming.
As the stock market goes, so goes the wealth and the health and economy.
So what exactly is the stock market measuring?
March 26th, 2024. This is the Financial Forecast. You know what happens every Tuesday. The Financial Forecast. A show that delves to seek into matters affecting our economy. We have had a very, very eventful month of March. I can tell you that for sure. And we're going to be doing a little bit of highlights as we get onto the show. So you're listening to us, 98.4 Capital FM. It is good to have you guys. I hope you're enjoying your March of March. And you can catch us online if at all you are not near any radio at 98.4 Capital FM. www.capital.co.ke/listenlive. And you can also give us your comments and feedback at Facebook, X, Capital FM, hashtag Financial Forecast. Now you're with me, Nyambura Ndongo, and my co-host, Ken Gishinga, Chief Economist, Mentoria Economics. Ken, how are you?
Good evening, Nyambura.
All right. You well?
I'm well. I'm always happy to be here every Tuesday evening.
Yeah.
The last Tuesday
of March
before Easter.
A very eventful, yes, before Easter. Short week this week.
Very indeed.
Well, I always tell our listeners that I'm giving them a cheat code. By the beginning of the week, if at all you do not know what is happening in the markets, you don't know what is happening out there. Trust me, you're starting off at a very back foot. So at the every Monday, you can actually get a report. It's called The State of the Economy, published by Mentoria Economics. And you can actually get it by emailing info@mentoria.co.ke. And we only have 1 hour to discuss so many things. And right now, you know, if at all we say economics, we say finance, people will want to check out. But I think what has happened the last 2 years, Ken, is that everyone is now very aware. If you tell them e-teams, if you tell them housing levy, if you tell them tax, if you tell them inflation, everyone now really understands. So this information, isn't 1 hour is not enough. So if at all you want to get more economic insights, you want data analysis, you want forecasts, info@mentoria.co.ke. Ken, let me tell you, something interesting happened.
Tell me.
Na nauliza all the government, shirika zote za serikali, kama KRA, na wauliza kwa heshima, as you do changes, and especially increasing duty, like the one we saw recently, it is important to do public participation.
That, Ken, is the chair for budgetary
and appropriations committee.
Yeah, he was like, "You guys are doing too much. You guys are doing a little bit too much. You need to tone down." But maybe you can remind our listeners what is the role of this committee in terms of taxation and the economic forecast of the country.
It's a quite a fascinating turn of events.
Right.
The chair of the Budget and Appropriations Committee really is the person at the forefront of talking about any issues on investigating, setting, reporting on matters of tax and tax estimates.
And suggesting.
And proposals.
Yeah.
So these are the people before any document goes to Parliament. They sponsor that document. So it must have come as a surprise to most Kenyans when the chair proposed that Kenyans might be overtaxed.
You know, it's funny.
And I mean, it's true, and I'm glad they've finally gotten to the view that we have spoken about on many occasions here.
Right.
But it's important that we don't play politics these things, because I'm suspecting this is another political play at hand.
Okay.
But they have to understand that these are matters that are affecting Kenyans in a very real way, businesses are hurting, taxes are quite burdensome.
Yeah.
And so I hope this is a turning point, that the Finance Act 2024
right.
will reflect the discussions right here, because it would be very disappointing to find additional taxation measures when the chair himself has pronounced himself on his disaffection for the tax policy for this country.
I think this is where we normally say insert meme, and then there's this meme of someone really having chest pains. Because I think in another setting, there was a certain MP who also said that the finance bill, it's such a very long document, Ken, we don't have time to go through all of it. So when we just go, we ascend to it. And I don't know, I think, you know, one of our editors, who also has the show that happens on Monday, Global Digest, is called Laban. I was listening to the news, he kept saying, Nyambura, let me tell you, izi vitu usieke kwa roho. Politics usieke kwa roho. One day this, tomorrow the other. And you know, Ken, we had a guest with us last week, Mr. Eric Musau, Executive Director, Research and Sustainable Finance at SIB. And I really had wanted to ask him during the show what sustainable finance is meant to be, but we discussed it very much later after the show. And he had very interesting insights about where he rates the bottom-up transformation, economic transformation agenda that is Kenya Kwanza's bottom-up economy, right? He gave it a 7 out of 10. I know you gave it way much less, but we are going to be discussing that later in the show. I can tell you, as we come to the end of March, I think it would be prudent to just go through things and highlights, news that made highlights throughout the end of March, because a lot happened in terms of markets. I think we saw the markets really, they were on a decline as the Fed, they were waiting for the Fed to meet, the outcome of the meetings, inflation. The markets were jittery. The only winner was cryptocurrency. And I told you, it's time, it is our time to go all the way up. In terms of energy, oil prices fell after OPEC extended its voluntary oil output. Maybe you can remind us what that was all about.
Yeah, absolutely. I've always said OPEC is a cartel
right.
that tries to provide their version of stability
yeah.
to oil all the oil prices in the market, because many of these countries that form OPEC fund their budgets
yeah.
From oil money. So it was not surprising
mm-hmm.
that they would give new measures on how production would be. What it matters to countries like Kenya, which are net importers,
right.
is what does it do to inflation in those countries. Luckily, we saw the fuel
yeah.
prices
yeah.
Easing off here.
By a shilling.
By a shilling. People are saying it's partly because of the exchange rate,
no.
partly because of global issues. But I think it's very important, particularly when countries are facing a recession, that they get an opportunity
okay.
to have fuel prices in an affordable way. So I think it was a turning point,
mm-hmm.
And it really affects global geopolitics.
Right.
The U.S. is probably the largest non-OPEC country and has been producing significantly.
Okay.
They have this technology called fracking that involves
right,
drilling.
Right.
And that technology is so superior that the U.S. has become one of the top oil producers in the world. So the U.S. and other non-OPEC countries are boosting supplies. And that has provided some stability in terms of, at least some reprieve
yeah.
To most of countries that are oil importers.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they are also the highest consumer of their own energy anyway.
Absolutely.
Okay. In terms of major economies, well, the one thing that really stood out was the Bank of Japan last week ending its regime of negative interest rates. How has that affected the market in Japan and in Asia generally?
Yeah, that came as a surprise. I received a lot of requests, not just from Kenyans,
right.
but from somebody as far down as South Africa,
uh-huh.
really asking, what does that really mean?
Right.
And what will be the impacts?
Mm-hmm.
I think the short-term impacts will be obviously it'll be more expensive. Credit will be more expensive.
All right.
So if you're a bank, if you're a company and you've borrowed money from a bank, you'll pay more money.
Yes.
If you have a mortgage, your mortgage installments okay. mm-hmm. will go up. And even for the government itself, yeah. the cost of borrowing, debt will actually become a bit more expensive for the government because the government borrows using the market rates.
Okay.
In the long run,
yeah.
there'll be changes towards savings.
Oh,
people right. will be, okay, I can finally start saving.
Okay.
At least I'm getting my 1% mm-hmm. as opposed to paying the bank.
To keep my money.
To keep the money.
Right.
So I think they'll see a saving culture
mm-hmm.
starting to build up. I think the yen will also the yen is also likely to strengthen a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's depreciated over the last few weeks, so
right.
I think it'll strengthen.
Okay.
And I think really it'll start normalizing
right.
where other countries have been. So interesting times for Japan, really.
Let's put our eyes out. What happened in the USA was inflation numbers came out. Within the month of March, we looked at their employment and what it is that they measure when they're actually looking at what inflation is. And we looked from employment in the USA to vinyl records in the UK. Maybe a highlight of the numbers in terms of inflation and employment in the US.
Well, obviously, inflation numbers have been at the core.
Mm-hmm.
We have the non-farm payrolls
right.
That had come out. Inflation, unemployment has been hovering between 3.5 and 3.9. Mm. Joe Biden argues that this is the longest time unemployment has been below 5% for the last 50 years.
Wow.
This is the longest stretch that unemployment has been about, been below 4%. So in a way, he appears to be taking some mileage from that. And if you notice, Anyambura, there's this interesting conflation of politics
right.
and economics, whether True. It's here in Kenya with the clip you've just played,
yeah.
whether it's Biden in the US, whether it's Rishi Sunak
exactly.
and the elections, uh-huh. there's this interesting morph of politics. And in fact, in the first episode for this year, I think I mentioned that this will be the most political
year.
Mm-hmm. So many elections.
Happy.
So we'll see a lot of interesting how politicians look at economic data, how they change positions
right.
from their previous positions.
Yeah.
But for the US, really, I think still the consensus that the US is still on a good path.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely, it's expected to the rate cuts that have been scheduled. I think everybody expects that to be on course.
Okay. We also had the Fed meet last week, and our position on Financial Focus was that they were going to hold the rates. So was that the outcome?
That was the outcome. We got it right.
Yeah.
And Bonairic also confirmed.
Yes.
So I think we were all in agreement.
Okay.
And in honest, the markets expected that. I think the only country that surprised everybody was the Swiss National Bank
mm-hmm.
that actually cut interest rates, but there was an expectation that the major central banks last week would hold interest rates.
Now that you've already gotten into Europe, I know Bank of England also had their meeting. So as you said, everyone held. So what is it that the Swiss are seeing? And what, so they reduced, why? Why, considering where they are and if at all everyone around them is actually maintaining, why will they reduce?
Their argument is they have hit the inflation target of 2%. If you look at inflation in the UK, it's still significantly higher. Just some specific areas like car insurance in the UK has gone up 26%. If you think of holiday packages, gone up 10%. If you look at very key household items have gone significantly up. That is not the case in Switzerland. And Switzerland is an interesting country. It's in Europe, but has found a way of carving out its niche.
Right.
It uses the Swiss franc.
Mm.
It does not use the euro. Yeah. And in a way, they are masters of their own destiny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why they are possibly coming out of this much earlier than the rest of the pack.
And do you think, considering how geopolitics has really played out, how there is just like the global slowdown in the recession, I would imagine the Swiss really their key economic, what can you say, is tourism. Like, that is what really drives the economy. Do you think people still have that much money to actually go and just have a good time? People are still doing very well to actually afford that the Swiss can now say, no, we have we have achieved the inflation, now it's time to reduce the interest rates.
Well, I mean, I think they offer high-end tourism.
Okay.
And I think at the very highest end, people, they still demand for those packages. If you think of about, the alpine skis, that's your high net worth individuals.
Yeah.
To what extent are they affected by inflation? Maybe to a lesser extent than your middle income and low income. So people could say those packages could still be competitive. Very, if you look at the exchange rate between the franc and the euro, it's almost one to one.
Okay.
It's about 1.03 to 1.2. So it's still very much within European standards. So I think for them, it'll be positive for them. I think banks, companies will be able to get up and run faster with cheaper credit and expect most European countries to start following them.
Okay. You also mentioned the interesting link between politics and economics. And in England, we can see it happening. You are educating me on how the England elections are actually planned. So what is happening?
Obviously Rishi Sunak, who was of Kenyan descent, is not having an easy time.
I can imagine.
As I said, inflation is quite high.
Yeah.
Growth is minimal because of very high interest rates.
Yeah.
And he has an election
coming up.
Unlike the US or unlike Kenya, where you have a very fixed date, the British have a window when they could make that decision. So the May 2nd date that Sunak had ruled out would have meant that today would have been the last day that Parliament existed, and he's absolutely ruled that out.
Okay.
I think they want to wait into Q2, when inflation is down, interest rates are down, companies are doing well. So I think he wants to go to the polls when there's a better economic story. Which is politics.
It is politics, but at the same time, politics and power.
I mean, the opinion polls right now show the Conservatives are heading towards a landslide defeat.
I will hold it until before, if possible.
So if you are Prime Minister, and remember the previous Prime Minister before Rishi only lasted less than 40 days.
Yeah.
So you have to be very careful with the decisions you make, and I think his political advisors have sort of advised that let inflation come down, let growth pick up, let the summertime come. People tend to be a bit more joyous in the summer. People tend to look at the better things in life during the summer. So it's an interesting system that's very different from what we see in the States or here in Kenya.
Heating is not going to be a problem. You're not feeling depressed. The sun, you can't see the sun. I mean, plays out, but I guess even that one, we see what goes on. Now, in Africa, we had the games happening. We also saw Nigeria really struggling with its currency crisis. And then we saw Somalia join the EAC as a full member. And you gave us a brief of what does this mean for the EAC?
Yeah, I mean, for Somalia, that's a big story. If you look at some of the big investors here in Kenya, they're of Somali descent.
Yeah.
There are many things that make a strong case for Somalia. Number one, it has the longest coastline in Africa, 3,200 kilometers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a lot of fishing, a lot of seaports for trade, very good connections with the Middle East.
Right.
So obviously that attracts other East African countries that want more outlets.
Yeah.
Number two, it has a huge population that's coming up. Number three, you have a very entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
I don't think Kenyans have come to fully appreciate how entrepreneurial Somalis of the community has been. And I think that adds more vibrance to the region. I mean, just Nairobi alone has seen a lot of economic activity.
True.
If go to CBD, go to areas like Kilimanjaro. And I think Kenya will be a beneficiary.
Right.
Because a lot of the Somali diaspora are investing here in Nairobi. So it's a good story for jobs.
Right.
Because these investments create jobs. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good move. I mean, some people talk about security.
Yeah.
Will there be any security gaps with Al-Shabaab?
Right.
But I think the government authorities are really thinking through that process.
Okay. And have we seen the same shift and that strength of the Somali community? Have we seen it? Is it only in Kenya? Are we seeing it in Uganda? Are we seeing it in Tanzania? Are we seeing it in Rwanda?
It's across, not just in East Africa, it's across Africa.
Okay.
It's even in the United States and in Europe.
Okay.
And it's other part.
Yes.
It's definitely there. There's something special about Kenya, though. I think Kenya is a very diverse community.
Right.
And that by that diversity, it allows different groups to come in very quickly, plug in, and operate.
Right.
See, maybe unlike in Tanzania where you have to learn Swahili.
Right.
Or in Kenya, English, almost everybody understands. That's why I think many countries come to Kenya. It's very easy to really acclimatize very quickly. So I think Kenya has been a very big beneficiary of that FDI from that community. And I think if it's well managed, I know right now they're working on a diaspora policy.
Mm.
I think it's something that can really be beneficial for the country.
It's interesting you bring up the topic about language because I have a friend who Kenyan working in Tanzania, and he actually says even their reports at some point they'll have to write them out in Swahili. So the other day you were having a show on BBC Swahili, and you were
uteka
I don't know. I think, in Kenya, I think business is easier to actually just come in and plug. And I think we are very accommodative. So it makes life way much easier for people to just come in and start business. Now,
although there are people who would argue about the language part.
All right.
Mm-hmm. There are people who look at a country like Japan.
Uh-huh.
Only 8% of the population speak English. So you're talking about 92% speak Japanese, and Japan is the second, third largest economy in the world. So there is that argument.
Yeah.
But people always say, particularly for a developing country, it's very important because Japan is an advanced country.
Very advanced, yeah.
For a developing country where all the aid is coming from the global north, it's very important that the people sending that aid are able to integrate. They Japan doesn't need aid.
Yeah, it does not need aid. So,
I guess that's a caveat
that you could
apply.
That's interesting. So in Ghana last week, the inflation numbers came out and also the GDP. So before we go to our break, we still have time, you can tell us how key is Ghana? The other day they defaulted. So how are the numbers looking like? What is their GDP looking like?
Well, Ghana remains a critical part of the African economy.
Mm.
It's the largest producer of gold in Africa. It's the second largest producer of cocoa in the world. So it's a very major player. That said, it's made some policy blunders, got into deep debt, even worse, defaulted on that debt. But it's still making amends. Right now, the latest GDP numbers came at 3.8%, which is not bad.
Okay.
Obviously, it's going through its worst economic crisis in a generation. Yesterday, the central bank met, the Bank of Ghana. They set policy rates at 29%. Yeah, that's right. I'm seeing your face.
Wow. Okay.
And that's the policy rates. So if you're talking about commercial bank rates, what a bank in Accra would lend to you.
32, 33. If you have a mortgage, one to you.
I mean, it's a very tough time. But they're still negotiating and they're getting lenders. And, you know, people always wonder, you know, what happens when you default?
Exactly.
Then gonna happen.
Hawajanguka?
I mean, they're
still moving.
Yeah, but, I mean, can you imagine servicing any business loan at 30%? Can you imagine having a mortgage at 30%? I mean, it's it's very, very difficult. And they will need quite a bit of support from the international community.
Yes.
They've gotten a bit of lifeline from the IMF. But yeah, it's definitely something that they are reflecting upon very, very keenly.
Okay, so they defaulted. They got the international community put in money. You meant to pay me back June, and then you do not pay me back. But then things are absolutely so hard for you. You still go back to that person and go like, you see the money that you gave me last time, I've been unable to pay. But now I need a bit more. So how is their credibility? Are they going to get... And you know, the interesting thing is, there is money that is there to actually fund developing countries. So really, does it hold that much water if at all they default, but they can still access credit?
Yeah, you do feel that there's a lack of policy innovation in Ghana.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find many countries similar to Ghana. I don't think they give themselves every opportunity to succeed, because Ghana has such a very, very blessed labor force.
Right.
Some of the people running big entities in Europe,
mm-hmm.
in America, Ghanaians.
I mean, if at
in
all.
Kenya. I don't think they are tapping into every
right.
aspect of their core, because Ghanaians are very smart,
mm-hmm.
very smart people. So it tells you there's a lack of policy innovation, policy thinking, asking, how do we play this mining thing?
Yeah.
How do we play this cocoa thing
cocoa, yeah.
to our benefit? And to a certain extent, maybe even the roles
mm-hmm.
for people to do that are not created. I've always proposed many times on this show
yeah.
that across Africa, you need to have sort of like ministers for planning or minister for economy.
Right.
If you go to many European countries, they have the treasury minister, they have the central bank governor. Those two attend to the day-to-day. The treasury ministers tend to look at taxes, policies. The central bank governors tend to look at interest rates.
Yeah.
But you need somebody who looks at planning. You need somebody who looks at economic planning. So you'll find that in Europe, they have ministers for economy. So they're not caught up in the day-to-day
mm-hmm.
Hustle and bustle.
That's true.
But they ask these fundamental questions. How can we fundamentally change our country? And
mm-hmm.
I don't think enough African countries
have
created those dockets.
Okay. You know, you will tell us maybe which countries are doing significantly well in that as we come in and look at something that we started discussing last week, and that is the bottom-up economic transformation agenda, which, as we had actually said, ties into some planning that happened within the country. For now, it is 7 o'clock.
Record closing highs so far for the Dow.
Blasting through a ceiling.
In a record-setting IPO.
Investors who have been riding the wave.
When the stock market is booming, we're made to believe the economy is booming.
As the stock market goes, so goes the wealth and the health and economy.
So what exactly is the stock market measuring?
We can tell you so many things the stock market is measuring. And welcome to Financial Forecast every Tuesday. That we discuss what is happening in terms of our economy and money matters and basically everything that is touching on your pockets. You're listening to us at 98.4 Capital FM, and you can catch us online at www.capital.co.ke/listenlive. I am Nyambura Ndongo alongside Ken Gishinga, Chief Economist, Mentoria Economics. And if you are just joining us now, it is not too late. You can get everything that we've been discussing, this and every other episode we've had, by actually getting to a Capital FM SoundCloud page. And then listen to all the episodes you've had. Before the break, we were discussing key highlights and key things that happened within the month of March in terms of what we have seen happening globally, within Africa, and now we are getting home, and that is Kenya. Remember, all this information that we have, you can catch it online, but if you want deeper economic insights, you want data analysis and forecast, you want to get a snapshot of the state of the economy every single Monday, you can get that by emailing info@mentoria.co.ke, and then you will be advised accordingly. So Ken, before you went on break, you were telling us how Ghana is on its way to, well, the inflation numbers came out, the GDP as well. So are they still having cocoa? Like, how generally, what is driving the GDP? If at all, they're actually defaulting and everything is still working. Like, you know, they have not stopped producing. So why are they defaulting? Like, do they have a bloated workforce? Do they have, is the government not able to cover? Are they growing at a faster rate in terms of infrastructure? Like, what is leading to their crisis?
Well, I think the key word is they defaulted. when you say they're defaulting.
Oh, okay, right. They defaulted, sorry.
I think the listener will believe they're defaulting every day.
Oh, and they already defaulted. The yeah, it happened that time.
They have had their moment of mea culpa, and they said they are working on it.
Yes, oh my goodness.
I think the challenge they had is, just like many African countries,
okay,
the public spending was very high.
Okay.
Things, and I've said on this show,
mm-hmm,
things that can be done by the private sector.
Let the private sector do it. Okay.
Things that can be done by other bodies. For example, one of the pet projects for the Ghanaian president,
mm-hmm,
was the big cathedral,
yeah,
in Accra.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be the biggest cathedral in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic project. Can have many social benefits.
Right.
But I would have believed the diocese in Accra
should be
the one in charge of that. Right. In as much as the president maybe is a devout,
uh-huh,
he maybe should have supported the diocese,
okay,
to do it. I don't think maybe it should have come from the past, because even dioceses have their own budget,
they
do raise significant funds for that.
Yeah.
So it's stuff like that. Okay. So you end up having excessive, a bloated public expenditure.
Right.
And when you go through line item by line item, you could have said, this could have been done by the private sector. This could have been done by the county or the state.
Mm-hmm.
When you go through that process, and I've said that process called the principle of subsidiarity,
uh-huh,
where you let everybody do its rightful part, you're only left with the key things, such as military,
yeah,
law and order, large-scale infrastructure. If African countries went through such a process, we would not have such public, very bloated public,
uh-huh,
budgets.
Right.
We would not need to borrow as much.
Right.
Interest rates would be quite low.
Very low.
And the private sector would thrive. Now in Ghana, if you go to a bank in Accra, you'll be told that 30%. What business, what media house, what restaurant can you run?
Which is interesting, because
30% low.
If they would actually stand to gain in terms of their exports, and right now I think that would actually really stabilize also their currency, then...
Another thing is they never took, like South Africa,
mm-hmm,
they never took full advantage of the commodity upswing. There's a time gold was doing well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we started this show, Nyambura, gold was at about 2,000,
yeah,
an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, and that's why I tell you, the strategists have to be able to be there, because the strategist will tell you what's the forecast for cocoa prices,
mm-hmm,
what's the forecast for gold prices.
Okay.
This is a sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
This is where you want to, you're at the peak. From here, it's all down, because interest rates will go up, demand will fall. So if you want to make a good move,
do it now.
That's it now. And I don't think in Ghana, in Kenya, across Africa, I don't think we have enough people who position these governments to tell them this is a time.
Yeah.
This is a commodity super cycle. take advantage of it now, sell right. as much now. And I think lack of those strategic moves, again, the real estate sector was highly, highly ballooned, if you like. So those are huge investments, very similar to what we've seen in Kenya, overpricing of the real estate. A lot of Nigerians came to Ghana to invest.
Okay.
You know, it's only a 12-hour drive between Lagos and Accra.
So they put all the money in...
Yeah, real estate. Okay. So all those proceeds of Ogas sort of fed the real estate market in Accra. They said it's only a 12-hour drive. It's like from here, it's like from Mombasa to Kisumu.
So they had now houses which absolutely do not even have any people to live in. Similar to what is happening, and we are about to get to 75 floors. So no one is counting.
So Ghana went from being a poster child for being economic success to, you know, in the likes of Kwame Nkrumah.
Yeah.
The ones would say we never face east nor west, we face forward, pioneer of the Gold Coast. So in a way, it has been affected, and I think it just comes down to policy choices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The policy options, I don't think they made the right policy options for a long period of time.
Right.
These things tend to add up over a significant number of years. Obviously, when COVID came, it just made things worse. But it just exposed what
the
had
underbelly.
Been. You know, they say when the ocean recedes, you get to see who is swimming naked.
Let me tell you, as you're talking about long-term policy and planning and things they would have made better. You know, it's quite sad considering that Ghana is such an ancient economy, if I can say, very established. Like, if at all you're talking about Africa and an economy that is very strong, Ghana always stands out. And if they are getting here, I don't know if red flags were a country. But I don't know if I start with news making headlines in the month of March. Let me just as also strike. We have 6 more days to register on eTeams. That was the directive that happened at the beginning of the month of March, and the government changed and said that it is not just people who are earning less than 5 million. This time around, it is everyone. Like all persons carrying out business, formal and informal, even with the people earning, making revenues of less than 5 million and above across the border, farmers and everything. Of course, it has really angered very many Kenyans, but the deadline is 31st of March. There was that. Then last week, the housing levy was actually, the affordable housing law was signed off. And that means that 1.5% tax from the employer and the employee is going to be effective in the month of March. But we had an interesting show last week. We are discussing the bottom-up transformation agenda. But today, Ken, something that we touched on last week was it is not a new agenda that is actually being implemented. So we have Kenya Vision 2030, and the transformation agenda for the Kenya Kwanza administration is also borrowing from a team that sat down and said, you know, this is what we envision Kenya to be in 20 years. Then they sat down and then they broke it down into 4, the medium term plan 1, 2, 3, 4. The first one started 2008, 2012, and then 2013, 2017. And then 2018, 2022, and now we're in the final and fourth. Maybe you can start with, I don't know if people still remember Kenya Vision 2030. And I think we remember it mostly in Kibaki's time. So is it still active? And, you know, now we're on the fourth term. Where did it start? Is it even still being actioned?
It was very emblematic of the Kibaki administration. And I think what made him particularly proud of it at that time was it was really in the backdrop of the post-election violence that had come in about 6 months before.
Yeah.
So the country badly needed to unite and a plan on wealth creation had to become up. And really, it has been a blueprint that was started then. What people might be surprised is Kenya is not the only country that has a Vision 2030. I can list to you about five countries. Abu Dhabi has a Vision 2030. Egypt has a Vision 2030. Qatar has a Vision 2030. Saudi
has a well, those are oil-producing countries. Eh? I can see the odd one out.
I think the point I'm trying to make is, I think with all the benefits of forward-looking, I think the sad thing sometimes about these long-term plans is they are tend to be pushed by private consultancies that pitch to these governments. This is important, which is all good if it's a good term plan. But I've always said public plans should come from the people. The other day, you know, we were talking about the two sessions
In China.
What they do is literally every village meets, submits its plans. Every village goes to the next county, from the county to the central government.
Yeah.
So it's the real bottom up, it as is I tell you.
Yeah.
It really comes from the
bottom.
From the bottom all the way to the top. I think sometimes the challenge with a lot of the vision documents are the privately private companies that pitch, and governments, obviously the governments want to win elections. That's, I think that's the only challenge. But the idea of planning 20, 30, 40 years is a profound idea because it helps you look at key ratios. It helps you think through of the resources you'd need. The challenge, though, is administrations. You're in a democracy. So the winners of elections, you can't control that.
Right.
What Kenya has been able to do is each administration has come to try and customize each.
Yeah.
So Uhuru Kenyatta came, part of the Big Four was put within the vision, the second medium-term plan.
Yeah.
Now with the Ruto administration, the better is sort of being customized. So I guess the plan has to be big enough to be customized, but also small enough to be a bit specific, because things like COVID, you can't predict or economic downscale. So some of the people think of the Thika superhighway, very heavy infrastructure. So a big theme of Vision 2030 was very heavy on infrastructure, which was good because it helped us close the infrastructure gap. The challenge, though, is I don't think they anticipated the debts that would accrue
from that.
So if you look at the SGR and that, so I don't think they, I think at that time there was that belief that as the economy grows, you'll be able to get more money to offset
the debt.
But I don't think things like COVID had appeared. So this whole debt jitters that you're having right now, I don't think they've been properly thought through, which gives us another opportunity right now as we work on the fourth medium-term plan, which was launched last week. But when I read it, I saw a 16 trillion spending agenda. I asked myself, how will the taxes be raised? Are we going to get into more debt? So I think that's the clarity now that the infrastructure model, it's very good because infrastructure opens up farms and cities. But if it's not well managed, it can leave a country with very huge debts and you end up being in pretty much where we are now.
The document actually, which is nice, or 412 pages, says that how the medium term, the fourth medium term plan, plans to be financed is through domestic and foreign direct investments, including public-private partnerships and green financing. We did talk about green financing and carbon credits and stuff like that. We can see public-private partnerships. I don't know how that's successful, how successful that has been. But in terms of borrowing from support from development partners, we have seen IMF heavily also coming in, World Bank, giving us a lot. There's the money, but then it also comes with a caveat. And then there is now domestic. And I think this is where the pains are at, even as we played the clip at the beginning of the show. You're going to get the money from us. And if at all you look at in terms of the Kenya Kwanza agenda, and they're looking at bringing down the cost of living, that definitely has not happened 1.5 years in. I think we can say 1.5 years. Eradicating hunger. Okay, the good thing is the rains have, the other day, the rain was absolutely heavy. Creating jobs, I think right now, okay, we do not measure it, but the economy in terms of employment is struggling. Expanding the tax base, that, I can tell you, 100% achievement. Improving foreign exchange balances. Yeah. I think the other day we were reading that we spent a significant amount of money paying off our debt. So the currency strengthening also gave room for the government to clear a little bit of its debt, right? There is improving, or wait, eliminating wastage of resources and actually ensuring some of this medium-term planning things are done through county. But county are struggling. They do not have the funds. And when they have the funds, they are not paying their suppliers. And we saw the other day we were discussing 2% and 4%, Kiambu and Nairobi are doing the worst. So Ken, my question is, we are in the fourth term of this plan. Have we measured what happened in the first, the second, the third? And then now we can actually say, yeah, you know, this is the plan that we had. This is where we've gotten. So even as we get into the third, there's some things that... Is there a team that sits together and says, this is where we were meant to go. This is where we are. And there are things that just dropped along the way. So there's no need for you to continue moving, yet a fundamental thing that was meant to be your backbone is being left behind.
If you look at the Vision 2030, one of the key projects was the LAPSET.
Mm-hmm.
And LAPSET is a grand project. When the Uhuru administration came into office, they realized LAPSET is a very expensive project. And I think there was some going slow mm-hmm. on that, because I think they quickly realized how much it would gobble up. Now, the issue of communication you've raised came up a lot during the Uhuru administration, and we saw the setting up of the PDU,
mm-hmm.
the delivery board, that was supposed to communicate, give people indicators on what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Kenyans saying that's just PR
more
and all that.
More committees, more money, more, you know.
Right. And I've always said, at the end of the day, as you say, it's about jobs.
Yeah.
What the country badly needs.
People
jobs.
Need to get this money so that they can get the money from the people.
And I wish this Vision 2030 began with that. Like,
right.
What Kenya really needs are jobs.
Yeah.
So we need to create a good environment where businesses thrive and hire more mm-hmm. people and expand.
Okay.
When you have heavy government involvement, you crowd out the private sector,
mm-hmm.
and the private sector is unable to hire. In fact, that's why you're finding some of the big companies, the buyers are all sort of leaving the country.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this could have been an opportunity, and I think I said it last week,
particularly
with the Kenya Kwanza administration that really ran on the platform for economic transformation. This was the first administration that really ran on that platform.
Yeah.
If you think of Uhuru's administration, those are ICC
mm-hmm.
mantra.
All right.
If you look at Kibaki's, okay, you could say Kibaki was also an economic, but it was also about other things.
Right.
But this was the one administration that squarely put an economic idea.
Right.
And I think this could have been a really good opportunity to really define what success
mm-hmm.
what looks like.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big middle class,
right.
Counties that are vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
That can pay their own source
right.
revenue.
Yeah.
I feel, as you say, it's 1.5 years. I think it's a bit longer.
Yeah.
I think that defining stage is slowly coming to an
mm-hmm.
end. if you start hitting 2 years,
yeah,
people start asking, okay, is a longer time for defining.
Yeah.
It's time for doing. And I think that's where really now the rubber meets the road. It's not too late, but I think it's very important we go back to the basics.
Right.
The amount of graduates the universities are producing, who we are exporting labor to Europe, exporting labor to America,
mm-hmm.
when we don't have enough doctors, when our own interns are all on the streets.
They're on the streets.
So there is still a fundamental rethinking. And I think these medium-term plans, perhaps with a bit more public participation, because, you know, you just get the document on your WhatsApp.
Yeah.
You don't know the build-up.
Yeah.
Yes, but you don't know the build-up. You don't know where the public participation. And I hope as we move forward, Kenyans can start engaging, giving feedback on some areas that needs refining.
Yeah.
But at the very, very least, we need to look at taxation. How do we bring down taxation? How do we bring down interest rates? How do we allow private sector to be what it was meant to be, a vibrant source of job creation?
And I know we're almost going to the time of having the finance bill and the plans. Maybe we shall be told VAT is higher. You know, government is, there are people who are working, they need money, Ken. They need cardi. They need money. But again, you know, in many of our shows, and I think we really emphasized on this towards the end of last year, beginning of this year, is prudent financial forecasting. Now, government is given the duty to have this public good. They're not meant to be profit-making. So for them, you would anticipate planning is going to be so key. And that is why maybe under the Kibaki administration, and you were telling me he was the minister for planning back then, he actually saw the need to actually sit down and have a team that just focuses on planning. But so far, the disconnect is within maybe a month or a day, geopolitics, Russia and Ukraine. There go your grains, there go your food. The next thing, Israel, Hamas, maybe your oil, your gas, it's just disrupted. So you're going to come up with a 20-year plan, which is nice, until all these things happen. And then you have also said it cuts across, those are five regimes of elections, and then everyone will have an agenda, and then the market is not like the last, from COVID, everything that everyone knew was redone. So how can that plan, is it fluid enough? Is it flexible enough to accommodate all these shocks, just black swans everywhere at this particular point? And are these some of the challenges that they're actually facing?
Well, one thing, Nyambura, that we were taught during our university days, and which I think is becoming true and true by the day, is a difference between the government and the state.
Right.
And it can sound very trite.
Yeah.
But it's a world of a difference. Your government comes in every 5-10 years.
True.
The state
runs
through.
It does not stop at some point.
Okay. So the state is very, very powerful. So some of these plans are actually plans
of the state.
Yes, the government can come in and align.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you find people like Kibaki were successful, because Kibaki was a part of the state for a long time, as a minister for planning before being in government. And you'd ask, what's the evidence of that?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at that document you've talked about, the medium-term four plan, you said it's 412.
Yeah.
I was very keen on debt. Actually, it mentions debt 26 times.
Yeah, that's 412, how actually.
It mentioned debt 26 times. There's one particular table that tells you about the debt to GDP, our forecasts for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
And I believe in the year 2027... 2028, which is the last year, they're talking about a 53% debt to GDP ratio.
Wow.
Which is pretty significantly high.
Yeah.
Only 2 months ago in January, when the president was in Nakuru,
right,
He said, what gives him sleepless nights is debt. We are spending 70% on debt service.
Yeah.
And only 30 on counties, development.
Not even enough.
And salaries.
Right.
And he made a proposal, which I think was one of the best proposals we've ever seen from an economic perspective. He said we should flip it.
Mm-hmm. It should be 30% goes to pay debt.
Right.
The rest is actually going in to grow the economy and the people.
So you'd have expected the people now preparing these documents
to have that in mind.
It should have reflected in that.
Okay.
So the number you should have been seeing there should be 30%. And that's why I keep saying, and
disconnect.
Also the President Uhuru faced the same
mm-hmm.
issue. You'd make pronouncements. You'd say we need to have suppliers,
right.
Pending bills.
Yes.
Need to be solved, yeah. But things just... So these, it's part of the political economy.
Yeah.
Where sometimes the administration desires,
right.
But the state does what the state does.
I think I remember what Hatch, our other guest, said the other day, there's a lead and a lag. So you'll actually come and say, you know, yeah, this is where we are going to go. By the time you get onto that, we are in medium term. Okay, we're in the next vision, something. Well, so how successful do you think this team at Kenya Vision 30 currently is?
Wow, I mean, it's a very hard question. You're putting it there. I think the earlier days, it tended to be a bit more...
We had more of it.
I think there was more engagement.
Yeah.
There was more engagement. You saw what they do on a day-to-day basis.
Faces, yeah.
I don't know if they've changed strategy. I don't see or hear from them as much.
That's
maybe they allowed maybe the government mainstream to communicate it.
Okay.
So it makes it harder
to
make that assessment.
One thing I know we discussed sometime, and I think maybe it is going to be implemented, is the privatization of some parastatals. And I know the president was actually meeting the parastatal heads, and a few proposals were made, 30% budget cuts for parastatals. There was there's a hiring freeze, you know, 80% profit remittance to treasury. Well... I think they're going to do that three teams. And then the regulatory board needs to transmit 90% surplus. So you're setting targets. So these guys have to be profitable. Not only do they have to be profitable, but 80% of those profits have to go to treasury. Kenya Power is a parastatal, right? Those guys have struggled, loss-making, and they're the monopoly in absolutely that industry. So... parting shot, Ken.
Yeah. I think my parting shot would be this is a season for clarity.
Mm-hmm.
We need to, as we build plans,
right.
As we look forward into the future, we need to make sure that there's no contradiction, that the left, what the left does, and the right hand do not contradict.
Yeah.
Because often that's what we see sometimes from the policy side.
Right.
So this is a season for hope. In terms of the rains are here.
Mm-hmm.
The rains come with blessings.
Right.
Good agriculture, good economy.
Mm-hmm.
But the policies themselves have to attract investors. Investors want to be in Kenya.
Right.
But the taxation, the policy landscape is very unclear. So I think it's a time for a renewal.
Okay.
It's a time for a renewal, a time for rethinking, a time for sharpening.
Right.
And really taking this country to where it needs to be.
Okay. Well, let's see how March ends. Happy Easter. I think we shall be meeting after Easter. We really want to also take time and appreciate the guests that we've had in the month of March. Robert Hutchinson, partner at Control Risks East Africa. And last week we did have Eric Musau, who is at SIB, checking into matters to do with research and sustainable finance at SIB. You can catch all those episodes, including this one, by checking into our Capital FM SoundCloud page. That is always a mouthy. And anyway, you get your podcast from. But remember, you can get all this information and more in-depth economic insights and data analysis and forecasts by emailing info@mentoria.co.ke. For us, it is Happy Easter. Enjoy the last week of March. Blessings. Good evening.